So we hope Brother John can rejoin us again. In the meantime, we shall move on and invite Brother John Thompson to speak to us upon the fifth and final under the theme, The Divine Purpose Revealed in Creation, the final subject, Creation in the Apocalypse. Brother John, please.
Thank you, Brother Paul. Now, if you could lend me not your ears only, but your imaginations as well, I might be able to show you something quite wonderful. Picture in your minds, if you would, a candle. Maybe it's a large scented one from a gift shop or a small one on a cake, it doesn't matter. But it's a candle and it's burning. Yellow flame twisting and turning in the draft as candle flames do. So the wick is burning away and the wax is melting. And the candle is getting smaller and smaller as you watch it, and as it burns, it gives off energy. And you can see the smoke rising up. You can feel the heat. You can sense the smell. That which is solid, something that can be touched and handled, is being transformed into vapor. Now, were you to browse YouTube, you'd find plenty of video clips of candles burning. In some cases, they are cleverly played in reverse. So imagine you watching one of those. You see a candle burning backwards from the end to the beginning, so that it grows before your eyes. And what you see before your eyes is creation. You would see vapor, spirit, transforming into that solid candle, which could be touched and handled. You'd see the candle appearing, apparently from nothing. Not over millennia, but in a matter of minutes, in seconds where the video is time-lapse. So as the burning candle looked at normally is creation in reverse. That which has been created being transformed into vapor. Backwards, it's a wonderful visual aid to help us picture, although in a very simple way, just the merest hint of the merest glimpse of the creative power of the Almighty. But let's stick with the candle burning normally. And we can think of the book of Revelation, which we call the Apocalypse, as being such a candle. As we read it, we can see all the wax and wick of man's evil and godlessness being burned away, being dissolved into nothing. Until at the end of the burning process is the purity of a world that the Elohim can look upon and see that it is good, indeed, very good. Now, Brother Mark has already taken us to the seventh millennial day. In the Apocalypse, Revelation chapter 22, the chapter takes us to the very end of that day. What do we see? We see Eden with its rivers flowing out to water the land. Chapter 22, verse 1. And he showed me a pure river of water of life, clear as crystal, proceeding out of the throne of God and of the Lamb. And there's a literal counterpart to this in Ezekiel 47, where we read that waters will pour from beneath the threshold of the future temple and flow out with all their healing properties. But here we're dealing with the spiritual. And in the spiritual, we see the tree of life. Verse 2. In the midst of the street of it, and on every side of the river, was there the tree of life, which bare 12 manner of fruits, and yielded her fruit every month. And the leaves of the tree were for the healing of the nations. Back when man was excluded from the garden, the way of the tree of life was guarded and preserved, kept in the language of Genesis. Here we can see from the perspective of the Apocalypse that it has been kept through the generations and is now open once more. We think of the promise made to those brethren and sisters at Ephesus back in chapter 2. Chapter 2 and verse 7. He that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith unto the ecclesias. To him that overcometh will I give to eat of the tree of life, which is in the midst of the paradise of God. Again, we see how the foundation of this promise is in Genesis. But to inherit the promise, we have to take heed of the warning to that ecclesia. The fact that the qualification for such a blessing is to first identify the false teachers and to reject them. Verse 2. I know thy works and thy labour and thy patience, and how thou canst not bear them which are evil, and thou hast tried them which say that they are apostles and are not, and hast found them liars. Give it up an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith. The same Spirit that said of creation in Psalm 33 verse 9, that Yahweh spake, and it was done. And he who casts doubt on that event is speaking falsehood. And our path to the tree of life requires us to have no part or patience with liars, with spreaders of falsehood. Back in chapter 22, we see the curse removed. Verse 3. And there shall be no more curse, but the throne of God and of the Lamb shall be in it, and his servants shall serve him. That which alienated Yahweh from his creation has been removed. Mankind is no longer under the curse of death. The ground itself is no longer cursed to bring forth thistles and thorns. The waters of the river have purified it. The fruit of the tree has healed those taken from the nations to inherit the promise. And because the way is open, we can see man communing with the Elohim again. Verse 4, and they shall see his face, and his name shall be in their foreheads. No longer is there a need to hide from the voice of Yahweh Elohim walking in the garden in the spirit, in the cool, same word, in the spirit of the day. For all has changed back to how it was. With the difference, though, but those chosen and taken out from mankind have become the Elohim, become the angels of the new creation, a new heaven and a new earth. And so they can see his face, and they bear his name, and they share his image, so that in them God might speak, and it will be done, as by their voice a completely new order of heaven and earth is created for a completely new age. And here, Revelation chapter 22, just before the dawning of the eighth day, is the time when the Elohim can see everything that was made, and behold, it will once again be very good. And the most wonderful thing of all is the fact that we might be amongst those Elohim, the mighty ones, the saints, the bride, the company called of Yahweh and separated to be witnesses to all this. This is the culmination of the divine plan, the divine purpose revealed from the very outset in creation. There are three verses in particular in the Apocalypse which underline for us the importance we should attach to holding firm to the account of a literal seven-day creation. They each refer to words voiced either by or to the saints as they reign in glory. The first of these is in chapter 4, where we have a picture of the saints ascribing praise to the Almighty, saying, "Holy, holy, holy." That's in chapter 4 and verse 8. And the four living ones had each of them six wings about him, and they were full of eyes within. And they rest not day and night, saying, "Holy, holy, holy, Lord God Almighty, which was and is to come." But of all the attributes of the Eternal Spirit, the one they single out for particular praise is in verse 11. "Thou art worthy, O Lord, to receive glory and honour and power, for thou hast created all things, and for thy pleasure they are and were created." Thou hast created all things, and the reason for thy pleasure. But the point is that in that age of glory, the primary focus of all their praise is Yahweh as the great creator. That's even beyond the myriad of other reasons for offering him praise and adoration. "Thou art worthy," for thou hast created all things. Likewise, in chapter 10, here the saints are described as an angel, a rainbowed angel. They're seen as conquerors of the nations. Okay, if we go back to chapter 14, the Apocalypse, one of the roles of the saints in that age will be to proclaim the gospel, the Aeonian gospel, we sometimes call it. And we read about that in chapter 14, verse 6. And I saw another angel fly in the midst of heaven, having the everlasting gospel to preach it unto them that dwell on the earth, and to every nation and kindred and tongue and people. Again, what is singled out as a key part of the gospel message to all who dwell on the earth? It's in verse 7. Saying with a loud voice, fear God and give glory to him, for the hour of his judgment is come, and worship him that made heaven and earth and the sea and the fountains of waters. Worship him that made heaven and earth and the sea and the fountains of waters. Worship the Creator. This is the message the world will hear. The Creator, not the architect of evolution, not the author of the creation myth, but worship the Creator. So just like the gospel message proclaimed to us in our age, the message which will be proclaimed to mortal man in the kingdom starts with the Creator and with creation and builds from there. The divine purpose will once again be revealed in creation. But sadly, we have to think about the spirit abroad in the world today that speaks of evolution and the creation myth. If the act of creation is to be at the forefront of the minds of the saints in the kingdom, and if Yahweh as the Creator is to be the very core of the gospel message in that age, how great must be the condemnation upon those in this age who would deny the Creator, not just in the world. If our faith fails at the very first page of the Bible, surely we've got nothing. How serious a matter it is then that there are those who claim to be of us, yet who would limit the power of the Creator. Creation, it's an allegory, it's a metaphor, it's a parable, it's a type. In their hearts they say, a fable, a lie, falsehood. To deny the literal seven-day creation, to turn to science falsely so-called, to turn to man's wisdom rather than accept the simple message of the Spirit Word, that surely is the height of foolishness. For if they limit the power of the Creator today, how can they hope to worship the same Creator in the kingdom? That indeed is how serious a matter of it is. How can they worship the one they deny? How can they expect in that day to worship him that made heaven and earth and the sea and the fountains of waters? Now let's go back to an earlier point. But chapter 22 takes us to the very verge of the eighth millennial day. It's at the very end of the kingdom age, but the time beyond, hidden from us in the main, excuse me, that time has not yet begun. Now the apocalypse is not a linear history. One event or one chapter doesn't necessarily follow another. Let's go to chapter 20. And read the first three verses. And I saw an angel come down from heaven, having the key of the bottomless pit and a great chain in his hand. And he laid hold on the dragon, that old serpent, which is the devil and Satan, and bound him 1,000 years, and cast him into the bottomless pit and shut him up, and set a seal upon him, that he should deceive the nations no more till the 1,000 years should be fulfilled, and after that he must be loosed a little season. And on to verse 7, when the 1,000 years are expired, Satan shall be loosed out of his prison. Now this verse brings us to the same time at the end of the 1,000 years as we arrived at in chapter 22. But chapter 20 shows us how man's political ambitions will firstly be suppressed throughout the kingdom age, bound, shut in a pit, sealed, all totally under the domination of the saints. Then after 1,000 years, in the evening of the seventh millennial day, that evil of human nature, sin, will be loosed so that it might be destroyed. But sin can only be destroyed where it exists, which, as an aside, was the whole point of our Lord bearing the nature he did. But by the end of chapter 20, we've read of the second judgment at the end of the 1,000 years, the judgment of those mortals who responded to the gospel proclaimed during that age, the gospel of creation, remember. But after this judgment, after the death of those cast back to end their days in a world in turmoil, the only survivors are those chosen to inhabit eternity. Verse 15. And whosoever was not found written in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire. Sin and death will no longer be found on earth, and all is as it was, as it was designed and created to be. And finally, the consequences of Adam and Eve's actions would have been removed forever. Then turning the pages to chapters 21 and 22, we see the same 1,000-year period from another perspective. And as is often the case in the apocalypse, that final section starts with a brief summary of where it will end. And the brief summary is chapter 21, verse 1. And I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth were passed away, and there was no more sea. And again, we're dealing with spiritual things, but in the sign and in the symbol, we're back to creation. But this time a new creation with a new heaven and a new earth, not new entities, but all the wick and wax and dross of man's corruption of the old earth has been burnt away, leaving a world that is new and pure and healed and replenished. But it won't happen overnight. And until the end of the 1,000 years, there will continue to be those within the city and those without, and the city is the New Jerusalem. Verse 2. And I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven, prepared as a bride adorned for a husband. And I heard a great voice out of heaven saying, Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he will dwell with them, and they shall be his people, and God himself shall be with them and be their God. And this is a city comprised not of bricks and concrete and steel, but of the saints. And we read about the city again in chapter 22, verse 14. Blessed are they that do his commandments, that they may have right to the tree of life, and may enter in through the gates into the city. For without are dogs and sorcerers and whoremongers, and murderers and idolaters, and whosoever loveth and maketh a lie. So clearly here is still a division, those within the city and those without. That division, which is about to be removed by the warfare and judgment described at the end of chapter 20. Now in the prophecy of the book, we stand at the same point, at a moment in time when once the division has been removed, the curse is no more and all is ready. Here is the end, when God shall be all and in all. It's taken 7,000 years to prepare for that day, but at last everything is ready. Everything is very good. The new creation is finished. The eighth day can begin, as it did in Genesis. If it's taken 7,000 years to prepare for this, to set the pattern took just 7 days. But this has been the whole purpose of creation. The heaven and earth, the light, the day and night, the sun and moon, the firmament and waters, the trees and crops and green grass, the fish and birds, every living creature, man who has given custody of all this, all were created so that the day would come when the great Creator might be all and in all, filling a perfect world with his glory, for such is his pleasure and his purpose. And everything from Genesis chapter 3 onwards has been an interruption to this process. A mere intermission, which in the divine timescale is just a blink of an eye. But an intermission while mankind looks and learns and makes mistakes and displays his sinful nature. And ultimately is saved out of his own wickedness. But now in the prophecy, the interruption is over. And that hidden period we know so little about can begin. And so it is then, from the apocalypse, we can look back from this perspective. Look back to creation itself and also to the events in Eden when the world was young. And we can see with prophetic hindsight how this was in the plan from the beginning. And armed with that knowledge, we can go back to Genesis and see how the events of creation point forward to all this. How from the literal, we can see the spiritual. Given that the apocalypse in so many ways brings our minds to the end of the creation process, linking as it were the beginning and end of the divine plan, isn't it appropriate that the author who revealed all this through his angel to his servant John describes himself from the outset as the beginning and ending? Chapter 1, first chapter of the apocalypse, and verse 8. I am Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the ending, saith the Lord, which is and which was and which is to come, the Almighty. And turning a page or two to the letter to Laodicea in chapter 3, verse 14. And unto the angel of the ecclesia of the Laodiceans write, these things saith the Amen, the faithful and true witness, the beginning of the creation of God. The beginning of the creation of God. In the beginning was the Word. The Word that brought about creation when the Elohim said it was done. And that Word was made flesh. And that Word made flesh became the true light, which lighteth every man that cometh into the world. And I'm quoting John 1, of course. So it was that in the beginning, on the first day, the Elohim created light. Let's go back to Genesis chapter 1. Read the first five verses. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth, and the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. And God said, let there be light, and there was light. And God saw the light that it was good, and God divided the light from the darkness. And God called the light day, and the darkness he called night, and the evening and morning were the first day. These verses speak of division, of separation. The earth was in darkness and was empty, void, nothing. But that wasn't said of heaven. There was a division between the two, enforced by the waters. Then there was light upon the earth. With light, again came another division, that between light and darkness. And this principle of division or separation, heaven and earth, light and darkness, is a constant theme of the apocalypse. We think of heaven as the arena of the Almighty, the seat of power, and so it is. But in the book of sign and symbol, heaven is sometimes, not always, but sometimes, used for human power, the arena of man in rulership over fellow man, just as the book uses earth as a symbol of the ruled, the common people. So, for instance, going back to the Apocalypse, chapter 6, and verse 14. And the heaven departed as a scroll when it is rolled together. Well, heaven there is the government of pagan Rome, losing the privilege of power before the nominally Christian heaven of Constantine. As for references to the earth, we're given an unlikely example. The Islamic prophet, Muhammad. The context is the progressive downfall of the Byzantine Empire and its capital, Constantinople. Muhammad was part of that downfall, and he came to prominence amongst the ruling powers of his time and place, amongst the ruling classes, their heaven. But he was rejected by his peers and relegated to a position amongst the common people of Arabia, and that's where his story really starts. And in chapter 9 of Revelation, this is described as a star falling from heaven to earth. It's chapter 9, verse 1. And the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star fall from heaven unto the earth, and to him was given the key of the bottomless pit. And here the bottomless pit is the massed people of Arabia. By opening that pit, by tapping that human resource, Islam was born. Verse 2. And he opened the bottomless pit, and there arose a smoke out of the pit as the smoke of a great furnace. And the sun and the air were darkened by reason of the smoke of the pit. And there came out of the smoke locusts upon the earth. And unto them was given power, as the scorpions of the earth have power. Scorpions of the earth have power, earth rising up against heaven. And elsewhere, similar language is used of the divine heaven and earth. And the contrast between heaven and earth is seen to its greatest extent in a verse we've already read, back in chapter 20 and verse 1. And I saw an angel come down from heaven, having the key of the bottomless pit and a great chain in his hand. Now this, remember, is during the 1,000 years of the kingdom. There are no heavens of mankind left. The saints are in power as kings and priests. And this heaven in chapter 20 is their arena of power. The power of man will have been relegated as far as it's possible to be from heaven. That bottomless pit, literally the abyss, the deep place, the furthest it's possible to be from any vestige of heavenly power. So the mighty one who in the beginning created the heaven and the earth has continued throughout the generations to establish kings and depose kings and to set up whomsoever he will. The divine plan revealed in creation demonstrates that he who has the power to create has the absolute power to control all that he has created, to shut up or open, to seal or to loose, for he is indeed the supreme sovereign of heaven and earth. On the second day of creation, the waters were separated to divide the firmament of heaven, the divine throne, from what was beneath. So again, we see division, separation, a barrier. But where there is a divide, a means is provided of bringing that, of bridging that divide for the faithful. The Son of God was provided to bridge that divide, to be a path through the waters, or using another analogy, he was to be a door, the way, the only way. So we go to chapter 4. We read that a door was opened in heaven. Verse 1. After this, I looked, and behold, a door was opened in heaven. And the first voice which I heard was, as it were, of a trumpet talking with me, which said, cometh hither, and I will show thee the things which must be hereafter. And he was the one who stands by that door. Chapter 3, verse 20. Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If any man hear my voice and open the door, I will come into him and will sup with him, and he with me. And the third day, the seas were formed around the dry land called earth. The seas were to speak prophetically of the seas of wicked nations, ever moving, never still in their evil ways. A sea whipped into storm by the emergence of the Roman beast from the sea, which we read about in chapter 13 of the Apocalypse, until chapter 15. Chapter 15 and verse 1. And I saw another sign in heaven, great and marvellous, seven angels having the seven last plagues, for in them is filled up the wrath of God. And I saw as it were a sea of glass mingled with fire, and them that had gotten the victory over the beast and over his image and over his mark and over the number of his name, stand on the sea of glass, having the harps of God. Sea of glass, a sea that has been calmed. As once one man walked upon the water to tame the sea, the role of his people is to do the same in symbol of their authority over the nations. On the fourth day, lights were created to rule and to give light. And this too is a theme picked up in the Apocalypse. The idea is again of rulership. If you look at Genesis 1 again, this time verse 14. God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven to divide the day from the night. Let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years and let them be for lights in the firmament of the heaven, to give light upon the earth. And it was so. And God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day, and the lesser light to rule the night. He made the stars also. And God set them in the firmament of the heaven, to give light upon the earth, and to rule over the day and over the night, and to divide the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good. The sun and moon were created to rule the day and night, to rule, to have dominion over. And interestingly, the Hebrew word used for rule is in the feminine form, already showing that the greatest rulers of all will be the bride of the future age. So using the foundation set in Genesis, the sun and moon are used in the apocalypse as symbols of those who rule wherever they rule, which includes those who shine like the sun and the moon in the heavens of man's politics. Apocalypse again, chapter 12. We mentioned Constantine already, but he gives us an example of this in chapter 12 and verse 1. And there appeared a great wonder in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, and the moon under her feet, and upon her head a crown of 12 stars. The woman in the symbol is the corrupted ecclesia, now the Jezebel Christian church, empowered by Constantine to rule in his heaven. She was clothed with the sun of imperial authority. The moon reflecting the light of the sun, symbolizing the state church of Constantine's Catholic Empire. We won't turn to it, but in chapter 16, verse 8, events leading to the end of what had by now become the Holy Roman Empire, those events are described as a vial being poured out upon the sun, in this case the Habsburg Emperor of Austria defeated by Napoleon. But in the kingdom, there will be no more human sun or moon, no political power for emperors, whatever their nationality. No ecclesiastical power for the church, be Catholic or otherwise. The heavens of the saints don't need them. As we read in chapter 21 and verse 23, and the city had no need of the sun, neither of the moon to shine in it, for the glory of God did lighten it, and the Lamb is the light thereof. So in the spiritual outworking, things will have reverted to how they were in the natural, after the first day of creation. A new heaven and earth and light, but no sun and moon to rule. Once again, the glory of Yahweh is the sole source of light, as it was in the beginning when God created the heaven and earth. And again, we can see the divine purpose revealed from the very beginning in creation. On the fifth day, the waters brought forth abundantly. Birds too were created on that fifth day to fly in the heavens. It's in Genesis chapter 1, verse 20. And God said, let the waters bring forth abundantly the moving creature that have life and fowl that may fly above the earth in the open firmament of heaven. If we go to John chapter 21, in the last sign of John's gospel, we read that a net will be cast to bring a multitude of fish from the sea. In John chapter 21 and verse 5. Then Jesus said unto them, children, have ye any meat? And they answered him, no. And he said unto them, cast the net on the right side of the ship, and ye shall find. And they cast therefore, and now they were not able to draw it for the multitude of fishes. In the sign, we've been showing a trawling of people for the kingdom, for the right side of divine favor. We're seeing waters which are brought forth abundantly. Now, in the Apocalypse and chapter 17, waters speak there of man's kingdoms. Chapter 17, verse 15. He saith unto me, the waters which thou sawest where the horse sitteth are peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues. And it is from such waters that a people are still being called, are being called and separated. And once being called and separated, they fly like birds in the open firmament. In the language of Scripture, they ascend to the spiritual heights, which are the heavenlies in Jesus Christ. And so to fulfill all this, man was created on the sixth day. Genesis chapter 1, verse 26. And God said, let us make man in our image after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. In the Apocalypse, we see man made into the divine image and given dominion over all of the new creation. So on to chapter 2 and verse 1. Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, all the host of them. And to this description of the seventh day, the heavens and the earth were finished, we can add the words of the seventh angel in chapter 16 of the Apocalypse and verse 17. Where we read, and the seventh angel poured out his vial into the air, and there came a great voice out of the temple of heaven from the throne, saying, it is done. It is done. It is finished. It is complete. And as in the beginning the Elohim rested on the seventh day, so with the work of the seventh angel complete, the new Elohim will rest. We can see then that the echoes of creation in the Apocalypse take us to the fulfillment of all the promise and prophecy and hope of the divine plan as revealed in creation, to things of glory, to things of majesty, to things everlasting. Now, a day of study together is drawing towards its end. Let's finish with that quotation you'll see if you downloaded the program or looked at the website. It's Psalm 19 and verse 1. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament showeth his handiwork. We've seen in some small part today how that is indeed so. Had the heavens and the earth witnessed to the great power of the Creator. We've seen how in both this age and the age to come, the starting point for the revelation to mankind of the whole divine purpose is creation. The psalmist goes on to speak of Yahweh's perfect law and testimony. Verse 7. The law of Yahweh is perfect, converting the soul. The testimony of Yahweh is sure, making wise the simple. Making wise the simple. The creation account is too simple for those who take pride in their knowledge and education. But it is in understanding the simplicity that we become truly wise. And with such true wisdom, a wisdom and a faith that doesn't fail at the first page of the Bible, only with such wisdom can we really echo the words of the psalmist, verse 14. Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Yahweh, my strength and my redeemer. To which we add, and my creator.